Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm Andrew Rausch, and let me tell you, y'all, it has been so fun starting this club with you. It's very rewarding. There's something about making an idea go from, well, from just an idea to a reality that's really gratifying. And today, we're talking about that kind of work, that entrepreneurial spirit, that going from the drawing board to reality that we see in so much education. We see it in project-based learning. We see this in education about different business and entrepreneurial things. And of course, when it comes to tech, understanding the ways we can come up with an idea and bring it to the public, bring it to other people, well, that's going to be important no matter what you do when you graduate. Well, if that sounds interesting to you, you're going to like this week's guest speaker. It's the second in our series of live podcast interviews we recorded at the 2020 TCEA Convention and Exposition here in Austin, Texas. And this week, it's Michael Cohen, aka the Tech Rabbi. That's right, the Tech Rabbi. And if you're wondering what that means, well, you'll find out. Of course, I mean, it's basically what you think. He's a rabbi and he knows a lot about tech. But he's not just that. He's also a teacher and a speaker. He travels around as an education expert, and he was one of our featured presenters this year. As our guest speaker, he's going to talk to us about entrepreneurial learning. He's going to talk about design thinking, and he's going to talk about a big idea that he thinks is vital to both and to education. That idea? Empathy. So if you want to learn more, keep listening. We've got all of that and so much more coming up in this meeting of the EdTech Club, and it all starts right now. Now, there's not much prelude to this one. It's just a really interesting conversation about entrepreneurial thinking and the kinds of projects that can get students thinking that way and how the design thinking process can help. So you know what comes next. We're going to jump right into our conversation with Michael Cohen, the Tech Rabbi. Joining us this afternoon is Michael Cohen, the Tech Rabbi.
Hi, nice to be with you today.
It's good to have you. Now, we have to unpack what the Tech Rabbi is. You are an educator. You still teach in the classroom at a school. You're a speaker. You present at shows like TCEA. You have a family, and you're also an ordained rabbi.
All true.
So, follow-up question, how? How does this all go together? How do you do it?
Yeah, so you asked me just a second ago, is it coffee? So it's a mixture of coffee and just pure passion, pure energy. I've spent the better part of the past 5 years trying to figure out how can I help other educators sort of do two things. One is realize the creative capacity that they already have, that many times they're just lacking the vernacular, they're lacking some sort of term to have that aha moment where they realize, oh, like I do that. So then they can seek out and dig deeper and really refine those skills. And then to help them to develop new skills. So I try to practice that as a director of innovation. I run the innovation department, the STEAM engineering program, and then I also run myself and teach a entrepreneurship course. I have three different sections. I work with all grade levels, and one of the things that for me is just this thirst for learning and for growing. So even just the rabbinic ordination wasn't necessarily to become a practicing rabbi. Like, I don't have a congregation. It was just this desire to learn more and to dig deeper into the things that I'm passionate about. And the family piece is just, a huge blessing, and supportive wife who lets me travel and leave her behind with four kids.
That does help.
When I come back, then I have to play double duty. So.
That's right. Well, it's like, you know, make up for it. Yeah. You're doing a number of sessions this week. One of the things, because you have a focus on entrepreneurship, you are talking a lot about design thinking. For folks who are not familiar with that term, what does that mean?
So design thinking is a method of problem solving that was developed by a group at Stanford. And it's now probably a good 30, maybe 40 years old. And the whole premise is human-centered design. So when I do the sessions, I always ask the crowd, you know, who here teaches at a student-centered school? Like, what a weird question to ask, but it is a real authentic question, because many schools are potentially teacher-centered, or maybe they are standards-centered or high-stake testing-centered, and the idea of design thinking is that problem solving, you could create the best solution, and it is the most strategic, the most economical. It considers multiple factors, but if it lacks the empathy of actually truly understanding the needs of the user, the person that you are trying to solve the problem for, it might not be the best solution. And it doesn't always have to be something like catastrophic, like, oh, it will backfire, be fully rejected. It could just miss out on a deeper level of experience or impact. And it runs through this process that begins with empathy. You then define the problem. You then exhaust your ideation muscles of trying to come up with as many different strategies, as many different ways. I run this really cool activity called the Bad Idea Factory, and it's supposed to stimulate 100 different ideas to potentially solve or address the problem at hand. And it pushes your brain to the max. And even myself, I consider myself to be a pretty reasonable expert in the design thinking space. It is hard to really push that out, because we want our ideas to be great. We want them to be the best. And the idea that we might come up with a mediocre or a bad idea is overwhelming for us. But the biggest piece about design thinking, and something that is powerful for teachers to use, because I think teachers need to use the method before they bring it into the classroom, is that testing. To be able to showcase to the students or give them the opportunity through experience to say, I have this idea, I've done the research, I'm going to try it. It might not work out, but I can then look back at the process and try to refine it and then move forward again. Our students are trained to get the A, get the 100% on the first try. There are no second tries unless it's a makeup, which is usually because you did really bad, but we've already moved on from the content. So it's just a makeup. It isn't actually trying to enrich it. It's just, let's try to push that same narrative, get the grade that we really want, and then move on to the next.
Because we're already on to the next unit, yeah. Something I've heard a lot, even though it's still early in the week, a word I keep hearing is empathy. And of course, the design process, that design thinking process, starts with empathy. I guess the question there is why? And two, when you're working with students, how are you measuring that? And how are you building that capacity for empathy? And how does that inform design?
So the empathy piece is the most inspiring component for me, because I have a background in visual communication and marketing, and there was just sort of this natural awareness that you really needed to not just create great content for a company, but that you had to really understand who the company was and who the audience was that they were trying to support. So when I look at it then through the lens of a classroom, I'm really inspired by things like empathy mapping, being able to document different behaviors and actions and activities of others to really observe. It's an observation skill. A lot of the times when I introduce the design thinking process, there's this sympathy or this, we think we're empathizing, but we're actually judging.
We're filling in gaps ourselves.
Yeah.
We're not actually seeing.
So we're creating the narrative, where true empathy is understanding what are the realities of this person. What are their struggles? What are their day-to-day? What are their resources that are available? You know, how do they wake up in the morning? And when you really understand the not just the say and the do, or in the case of education, the think, which is really just an assessment think. It's not actually what they think, it's just when you tell them what to think, they repeat it back.
Did they think the right thing?
And then most importantly is the feel. So when you have that empathy map, these four quadrants, so what they say, not a problem, what they do, even what they think, what they feel, that's a struggle for many educators. And it's not because they don't feel for their students. I believe that if you're in education, you have to have that heart to do it. It just, it doesn't work. You can't sustain it if you don't have that heart. But to be aware of how students feel is such a mission critical component to really creating a classroom, community, and environment that's conducive for a next level of learning beyond just rote memorization and facts that are spit back. That if we're really trying to evolve the education process where they're still accountable for knowledge and seeking out and finding the knowledge, but what do they do with that information? How do we connect to that whole student?
When you think about design thinking, if you had to make a pitch to an educator to use this process, what's the benefit? Why do you use it, I guess, is the real question.
So I use it as a proactive and reactive method. So it's for existing lessons that you've done that maybe are good but could be better, or totally failed but have potential. You can actually use the design thinking model to then really dig deep into the areas that are weak. And it's usually because the student is like a bystander in the learning process. And so when you look at the role of understanding the student, you then have an opportunity to then use the ideation phase to even engage the student as a co-collaborator in that process of, let's figure out how we can present this information. Let's figure out new ways that this information can be presented and utilized and incorporated, hopefully, into our lives. And if you do it that way, and then the same with beginning from scratch is, when you understand who your students are, when you're able to create learning that considers their interests, considers who they are, their identity, you have more to work with, especially when we're looking at, you know, student engagement. I think that, you know, we're at a tech conference, so technology is a huge piece of it, but technology in of itself is not a long-term engagement mechanism. It is a tool to achieve some sort of outcome, but that engagement really has to come from that connecting and that community and culture building in the classroom.
You work with students to build, to teach and build entrepreneurship skills. Tell us a little bit about, like, what your program looks like, how you do that, how students progress through that.
Yeah. So the entrepreneurship program is my attempt at trying to filter the startup scene's approach to entrepreneurship. So when you look at things like Lean Startup, you have design thinking, you have, you know, all these different strategies. You know, we can, you know, name drop things like SWOT analysis, right? Like all these terms that we could learn about, we could research, but how are they applied? It's very difficult for a high school age student and even a middle school student to start to sort of filter and make the connections. Even if there's a curriculum and there are some incredible curriculum providers for entrepreneurship skill building education. So I looked at it, and I'm obsessed with alliteration. So I came up with this sort of framework of how to connect all of these different phases of entrepreneurship, from the marketing and the researching component of, like, primary research. There are people that will graduate from grad school that, you know, might not even have a full primary research experience. And I have students that are in 10th, 11th grade, 12th grade, who are creating surveys, going out and engaging with the public and pulling authentic data to then make decisions. Going through that process of looking at business models, getting to the phase of making sure that it's the market fit, that this is the right time, being able to research what else is out there. When they get excited that there's no other company doing this, I say you should be very cautious, because if nobody's doing it, it might be too early, or it might not really be a proper fit. They get to the point of prototyping. Either they're prototyping it themselves, they're getting micro grants to pay for maybe some more advanced prototyping. We're getting them to build their pitching skills, communication skills. They're, you know, right now at the phase second semester, I have students that are ready to pitch to investors. And the goal is not to build the next unicorn billion-dollar startup. I'm hoping that if they do that, they won't forget me.
True, naturally.
But it's more about the experience. So I have students who have created incredible, you know, entrepreneur experiences, even just creating a podcast like we're on right now, where they've engaged with incredible professionals and built a narrative that will help students understand what they need to know beyond the test and beyond school. And you know, in the next 2 weeks, we'll see if that student got into a really good college, and then I can pretend that the artifact in my letter of recommendation showcasing his entrepreneur skills was really like the main,
the breaking point.
Yeah. So then I can, we can use that as like a, hey, this works, right? Because it's not just about forget college, let's build a company. Even just being more intentional in your college experience because you had this experience in high school, I think is also, absolutely incredible for the students.
I think that's an interesting idea that entrepreneurial thinking and those skills make you a more capable person out in the world. Are your students, are they all planning to become entrepreneurs and get their startups going, or are some of them going to be artists and teachers and things?
So it's definitely a mix. There are students that at least at this point believe that they will fully launch their company is, by the time they graduate from high school. I have students that are just looking at, what are the future skills? What do I need to know? What do I need to just be aware of? So we'll bring different guests in. We brought a venture capitalist in who said, you don't need to be a programmer, but if you don't understand programming, you will be at a disadvantage in most industries in the next 5 to 10 years. You have to have an awareness. And we're not just talking about the tech sector. We're talking about in the space of practicing law, the medical field, places that have traditionally been it's not tech reliant, it's specialist, professional, 4, 5, 8 years of school reliant, after undergrad. So it's important for them to have that knowledge and that skill set beyond let's launch a company. But I don't set any expectations. They have to spend the first half of the beginning of the year really exploring that as they're going through the skill building and different research skills that they're getting. Like they got to figure that out for themselves.
And so when these students are going to go Shark Tank it, they're going to show off their business ideas to investors. What kind of ideas are they coming up with?
Am I allowed to share them?
I don't know. You tell me. If you've signed an NDA, please do not. But you can give us a hint.
So some of the students have shared, shared that I'm allowed to share, at least vaguely. There's one student. He's still known as the prize student by all the other students. Like they know he's the one. And I say to the other students, why do you think that's the case? You think that I like him better than you? He worked for the past 2 years, including summers, on this project. He was emailing me in the middle of the summer, asking me clarifying questions as he was dealing with a developer from India. How should he be making these decisions, and wanted to make sure he wasn't doing it wrong, that later he'd have a problem. That's why he's the prize student. He's not my prize student. He is a prize student because he cares and he's passionate about his work. So his startup idea stemmed from his lack of organization. And his parents both work. He would come home. He has a certain allowance a month, for whatever activities, and he would exhaust most of it buying, getting takeout, going out to restaurants because he wasn't really good at cooking. And he realized this wasn't sustainable. And he thought, well, maybe there are other people that have this problem. So he started to research, could he build an app that would help not just with, healthy eating recipes, but actually help using, long-term machine learning and AI to help you really find the best type of food options for your family and where to get it. And so the app sort of evolved into this sort of healthy eating coach. And he's presented it at a number of different school events. He's ready to pitch it to investors that we're trying to line up a couple for. You know, we're not talking about investors that are like at the 100,000 to like 10 million mark. They're micro investing. Maybe it's a $5,000-$10,000 investment, but that goes a long way when you're 16, 17 years old. So it's definitely impactful. So he's at this point where he presents it, and he's pitching this to adults, and they're captivated, and they're drawn in, and the positive energy of me just watching him pitch and drawing in these adults is absolutely incredible. I have students also who are creating. It seems weird to me, and I think anybody over the age of 25, but on demand clothing delivery. Like if you're at a party and someone's wearing the same outfit as you, apparently that's a problem in high school. So like you can within an hour get a new outfit brought to you for a fee.
That.
And I'm like, okay. So he did market research. He's got like 200-300 different data points, different users with multiple data sets. And we also did some older demographics so he could see like how not interested potentially anyone over a certain age would be in such a thing. I have students who are like into like ways of disrupting the mobile advertising industry. Students that are working on ways to sort of take on sort of a like Airbnb spinoff in the office space. Industry, because that's like Airbnb is focused on homes. No one is really focusing on what if you have some extra office space. So it's and then there's ones who like the students are, they're scared to let me share, and they're scared themselves to share. And I heard once from Dr. Tina Seelig at Stanford, who is just someone I incredibly admire. She's just super awesome. So anyone who's here right now or listening later. Tina Seelig at Stanford, you got to check her out. Her book's absolutely incredible. So she says, if you share an entrepreneurial idea with someone and they're able to stop what they're doing, copy that idea and surpass you, you're clearly not the one to take this on. You don't have the energy and the willingness to put this in. This isn't a part-time job. This isn't a full-time job. Entrepreneurial endeavors require you to go above and beyond anything that a regular company might expect. You know, Elon Musk says it perfectly, although work-life balance people need to be aware is you should be working 100 hours a week on this, and that's the only way you're gonna keep above the competition. So that's a dangerous quote, but it's still a quote that's important for students and anyone who's trying to engage in entrepreneurial endeavors that you can't do 2-3-4 hours a week on this. This got to be something real.
And I think we're all familiar with the growth of entrepreneurship over the last probably 40-50 years. But the students today in schools were born after the dot-com bubble. So from your experience, how did they approach the idea of entrepreneurship? How is it different? How is it interesting to you?
So it's interesting because there are so many more opportunities for this generation than were ever before. So, the dot-com was if you could build a website that could deliver a service and you could amplify that service beyond, a brick-and-mortar store or a giant chain, you were going to win. And after the burst, the internet had to evolve. Because that was clearly not a sustainable way of running the internet, and I think we could say pretty safely today that social media is the internet, like that is the internet, and so the students are in an interesting, and it's not just students. I mean, it's anyone. It's everyone in this room right now. If you are passionate about something, and you're willing to share that passion consistently. And you're unique, and the energy, the positivity that you have is able to be captured by the audience, you can be engaged in an entrepreneurial endeavor, an endeavor that can make money. And it's really important to know. It's not just building an app or building some sort of AI hardware. Those exist, and that for sure there's plenty of opportunity. Being able to leverage social media to showcase something that you care about is a real profession. And there's still moments where you'll read an article where someone will try to discredit that. But the internet votes and doesn't care what some tabloid or some online publication says. The demographic of 15 to 30 right now is via the internet is going to decide what is the future of work beyond these emerging technology and different established industries.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned social media and the career path that's there. I mean, any person can use it to boost their career, and some people do it as a career. I think a lot of times, you'll see something on Twitter or something, and somebody will be like, oh, wow, what intern ran this account so poorly or whatever. And I always think that's so funny because I'm like, no, they were interns a decade ago. They're professionals with salaries now. And I think that speaks to the change, right? I do you feel that these ways of thinking from a design perspective, thinking as an entrepreneur who has to meet people's needs, what does that mean for when this generation gets out in the world?
So I think that one of the mission critical tasks of education today is giving students as strong of a communication skill set as possible. And that doesn't just mean that you're good at speaking. It means that you are good at visually presenting information. It means that you are aware of the ramifications of your speech. And I think many times, and it's really not so much with the younger generation, it's actually the 30 and up crowd that's more problematic, is because it's so easy to thumb a response or a comment or a thought and press send, we just post stuff. We just share information. We overshare, we misshare, and the accountability, it's still, I think, very confusing, like what the accountability is. It's either like there's no accountability or like your life is over. Yeah. It seems like there's no middle ground.
Canceled.
I'm hoping that the young generation is gonna figure that out. I think that because they have had opportunities to be introduced to the internet as more of a fun social environment, that is going to directly impact how they approach it when it becomes something for business and something for the professional sphere as well as the personal sphere. I think that just being able to communicate and to connect with people and to understand audience, understand others, which goes back to the empathy piece, is if you are trying to share stuff, if you're trying to share information that you care about, like how do you do it effectively? How do you do it intentionally? And how do you do it so that it brings value to other people?
For the last question, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. You alluded to this earlier, but your undergraduate degree was in design, printmaking and design, I think. Do you make prints, by the way?
I need more time.
Okay, because it's a cool hobby.
I'm a fan.
How did you get from BFA in design to teaching entrepreneurship? And did you know that was a path you were going down?
Yeah, no clue. I was a design undergrad at Cal State Long Beach, and the incredible graphic design program, incredibly cutthroat, and I wasn't really into that. Like I feel that you can succeed without setting other people's projects on fire. I don't mean literally, but like that trying to destroy other people, that just is not like my personality. So I left the design, I basically minored in it, but I went with the printmaking, and I did this BFA, an extra year of studio, really trying to just refine the ways that I create art. I literally thought I was gonna try to be a famous artist. I had New York art shows, and I did the design to kind of like pay the bills. So I ran a small design collective. I was the creative director. We did marketing, visuals, like brand storytelling is now what they call it. And I was a little bit bored, to be honest. And I saw this ad at Fashion Institute in downtown Los Angeles for a graphic design instructor. It was just like one or two classes a week. I thought, oh, we could try this out. I want to give back to the next generation of design students. I want to give them insights and help them so that they can A, not make the mistakes I made, but B, so that hopefully I could shift the perspective of this cutthroat, like really aggressive approach to succeeding in the design world, marketing world. And what ended up happening is I finished the semester. They had the student evaluations, and I got a call to the department office, and they said, we want to go over the evaluations. And they said, we haven't had, very often this level of positive evaluations from students, that you were thoughtful and caring, that you listened to their needs, that they felt like you had personalized the focus to ensure that their design, skill or like awareness approach was really nurtured, and it wasn't just like learn Photoshop and Illustrator. So you want to teach more courses. So I was looking at maybe sunsetting at least the creative director component of that and just, doing design work. And I said, sure, let's take it on. And within 4 months, someone recruited me to be a director of education technology. I still was doing design work. I wasn't really sure like what the path was, but I think it was about my fifth year in the education world that I realized like, This is it. This is what I got to do. About fifth year. I started in 2009, and I got a master's in education. Big focused on technology innovation in my graduate work. And I realized that like this is the space, and it's I don't have to sacrifice my design, my art, because I have opportunities when I'm, brought out to present, to showcase and communicate and show how, you have to be an artist, you don't have to be an illustrator, you can do this with incredible, stock photography free in the Adobe Spark app that's royalty-free. Royalty-free, not, copyright's a big thing.
Yes.
Really big thing.
Know the difference, yes, that's right.
But like, you can creatively express yourself, and so I'm, super blessed to sort of have kind of come full circle in all the realms of my passions, but that it's, strongly rooted in the education space.
I just want to say thank you for sharing your experience with us, and folks, please help me thank Michael Cohen, the Tech Rabbi.
Thanks so much.
Well, that just about wraps up our conversation with the Tech Rabbi, Michael Cohen. But of course, if you want to learn more, or you want to learn about anything we talked about, find useful links, go ahead and check out the show notes in your podcast player or at tcea.org/edtechclub. That's where you can listen to the show, you can read the show notes, and you could subscribe in your favorite podcast player. And if you don't see yours listed, that's okay. You can pull the link, the direct RSS feed from that page and put it into whatever podcast player you like. So do not forget to subscribe and to reach out to TCEA with any thoughts, questions, ideas that this may have prompted or that you have. You can find us on all the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, etc. And you can get in touch with the EdTech Club by emailing us at podcast@tcea.org. Now, I can't let you go without a little bit of homework, but this week it's easy. Just go ahead and check out the show notes and find the links provided there to some of the ideas that Michael Cohen talked about in this episode, and of course, his website. If you're a real go-getter like Michael's students, though, and you're doing that extra credit work, well, this week you can get some extra credit by writing to us at podcast@tcea.org and sharing some of your favorite ideas for this kind of entrepreneurial or design thinking process. If you've used this in your classroom or helped them in a similar project, let us know at that email and we'll give you a little extra credit and maybe shout you out on a future episode. And don't forget, one of the benefits of subscribing and being a part of the EdTech Club is that for the coming weeks, we've got 10 more episodes with our featured presenters and our opening keynote recorded live at TCEA 2020. So if you missed out or you didn't get to see everything, or you're just jonesing for more education, knowledge, and sharing of ideas, well, this is the place. So make sure you subscribe and come back next week when we will return for another episode of the EdTech Club. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.